All right. Welcome to the Extra Features Podcast, episode number 305. I am Doug, joined by
me.
Yeah, you. Who are you?
I'm Doug's son, Dylan.
Are you sure you're Doug's son?
I don't know.
Have you ever had like a test or anything? Because you look nothing like your brother.
Yeah, Owen got my wife's side genes and Dylan got the Hainer genes.
So you're the handsome one then?
Yeah.
And the other guy's the pretty boy that we just put in the closet.
Yeah.
Yeah, the pretty boy in New York City.
And I'm Simon. I am here every show. I've not missed one in 305 episodes. And any specials, I've been here for all of them. I'm like that itch you can never get rid of. The doctor gives you something, but I keep coming back.
You just kind of froze there for a second.
I don't care. I'm recording it. They can hear me just fine. You're out of luck.
Fair enough. All right. Do you have any questions?
I do have one question that's been bugging me. I was going to save it for our future episode, but I've been having this discussion all day. Now, the character of Jason in the horror movie Jason, Friday the 13th, what is he? What is the classification of thing he is?
I was going to say, I don't know what he is. I just call him an undead killer. He's not really a zombie, he thinks. So I don't know.
Dylan?
He's just a monk.
It probably has something to do with, like, the water that he died in or something. Like, something ritualistic type thing.
Okay, hold on. So you're saying ritualistic. Who did the ritual?
Because I don't know.
You can't be bringing me ritualistic and have nothing to go with it.
Probably something.
Okay. I don't know. Because it reminds me of a lot of the next movie we're probably going to lead with, I presume, is Barbarian. Unless someone's got something great to discuss, like a magic trick he's performed, or favorite YouTube band, or going to discuss more rap groups I've never heard of he's watching.
You could discuss Tyler the Creator, yeah.
I know some rappers. but our first movie to discuss tonight will be Barbarian, written and directed by Zach Krieger, starring Georgina Campbell, Bill Skarsgård, and Justin Long. I will just start off by saying I absolutely love this movie. I think you should absolutely go in knowing nothing about the movie, and you will be surprised and shocked, and I absolutely loved it. It was bonkers, insane, and amazing. And actually, maybe I'm a bad dad, but I brought my 14-year-old son with me to see this movie, and that's why he's here, because I think he has a pretty legitimate take on the film.
Let's hear it. I'm ready for a 14-year-old's take.
I'd first like to say, when I saw it, I was concerned, but in a good way. You know what I mean? Like, it was very concerning, but in a good way, to where you had zero clue what was going to happen next. It was just kind of, I just found it fun because you had zero clue what was going to happen next. And it was just kind of, oh, what's going to happen here? Oh, well, that happened here. And, well, I guess the magic take that I have is that don't be scared to laugh at horror movies just because they're horror movies.
Sorry, people, we do spoil movies. I forgot to give the spoiler at the beginning. Continue.
There were genuinely funny moments in that movie, and me and my dad were the only two people laughing in that movie. And it was like, how do you not laugh when, you know, a comedian wrote the movie, you know, a funny man?
Okay, I have to agree with you. This movie is funny at times. I thought it was funny. I don't know how to start this. Let's start at the very beginning. It's what I want to discuss. I like the premise. The setup doesn't really happen. Like, you really think Bill Skarsgård's the bad guy. I totally thought he was at the beginning. I thought this chick was going to get hacked up. I thought stuff was going to happen there. And then it really doesn't happen there. It cuts over to the Justin Long thing. And I'm thinking to myself, what the hell are we doing? Aren't we in with this storyline? Nope, we're going to Justin Long. And then I'm listening to Justin Long, and we're spending a lot of time with Justin Long, and we're really missing what happened earlier. And I'm kind of like, where are we going here? And then we learn Justin Long's just a big dick.
Yeah.
Like, I can't describe him any other way than being a dick. So I'm like, okay, well, that's going to play up later. But we'll see where that goes. I don't really know. He goes, I got to check on my house. I'm like, okay, now I got it. He's got to go check on this house. So really, Bill Skarsgård's got nothing to do with this house. He's in Justin Long's house. I'm like, wait a second. This thing's getting deep now. But well, he had no right to be this deep.
Well, yeah, Bill Skarsgård, he was the Janet Leigh of this movie.
Yes.
He was a red herring. And I thought that was fantastic because they're playing off of Pennywise.
I agree with you 100%. Now, that's not my favorite scene. This film just goes completely bonkers at this point, which I love. Those basement scenes are insane. I'm like, I'm in. Still not my favorite scene in the movie. We get to the almost, I say, the last 15 minutes of the movie. And they're getting up to the top. And Justin Long looks, somebody's got to go, and tosses her over. I'm like, you win. You now are my favorite movie of the year. Totally did something I never saw it coming. I'm like, that man's a dick. He did a good job of being a dick. You win. Yes. Justin Long for Dick of the Year Award. Right, yes, there.
And to Dylan's point about it being funny, when the, I guess, woman in the basement is cradling Justin Long, and then she boops his nose.
Yeah.
When she boops his nose.
So I want to go back to the point when he goes down after he throws her off and he thinks he killed the woman in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, sorry, I had to do it. I had no choice. Somebody's got to live. I'm like, what the hell?
Well, that's the thing. I actually think this movie is deeper than it is on the surface. I think it's actually saying a lot about the Me Too movement in Hollywood.
Yes.
I think this guy, he honestly, truly believes he's a good guy. He believes he deserves to live. But he's not. He is so self-delusional. So I don't know if it's talking about the self-delusions of Hollywood or I guess really the self-delusions of the people who have been Me Too'd, but I think it nailed that aspect of it. I think this movie is a great horror film. It's funny as hell, and it has a lot to say. I think this is really one of the best movies of the year.
I 100% agree. Right now, I will certainly say it's sitting number one on my list of films of the year, which is a good thing. It got a nice score for me, which is positive to say, and which is good. I mean, what can you do? So I'm giving this a total positive sum up. I'm telling everybody to see it. I mean, we've ruined it, but I don't think we've ruined it. Like, there's so much stuff going on. We didn't touch on the Bill Skarsgård, other ideas, things he's up to, and this and that, and There's so much more depth in this film.
Yeah, and also to Dylan's point earlier, don't be afraid to laugh.
No, God, it's funny.
This second horror movie that we saw in the theater that was truly funny that nobody laughed at.
This is annoying as hell.
When we saw at the Purple People Eater scene, that scene cracked us up and we were the only people laughing in the theater. Don't be afraid to laugh at horror movies. The humor is there on purpose. It's there to release tension. The filmmakers know what they're doing. Laugh at horror films when you want to.
I 100% agree with you. Now, Dylan, I know you're only here for the one review. I presume you're disappearing now, but you have to answer one question for showing up on the show. Do you even know what the question is? What's your favorite film, Dylan?
Oh, probably Us by Jordan Peele. He's my favorite director, and I just love the way he stages his movies. And again, the comedy funny by just relieving the tension.
Okay. Goodbye, Dylan. You're done.
Okay. Goodbye.
Good night, Bob.
Good night.
Matt, I apologize to our listeners. This is the worst night of freezing we've ever had, so please bear with us. We're going to do the best we can, and hopefully I'll be just as bad as editors I normally am, and nobody will notice the difference.
So are you confessing, or are we going to go Hail the King?
Hail the King? Did I put this on the list?
No, Woman King. You put Woman King on the list.
Oh, yeah, Woman King. I'm like, I don't remember Hail the King. You know how many movies I've watched? Oh, quick story before I get to Woman King. I was watching Medieval, but in my head, I read it as Medieval.
Okay.
So I thought it was a horror film. I'm like, Ben, what the hell is Ben? Where the hell is my horror? So then I had to pause and look up IMDb going, oh, I'm an idiot. So I'm reading all these guys getting it's woman empowerment, this and that. I'm like, I didn't get that at all from this film. I thought it was not even well shot. I mean, the action scenes to me were not long enough. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've seen this film done with men 100 times because it's just women doing it. I'm supposed to be into it. It's got the same problems as all of them do. I didn't find the characters interesting. I found them very stereotypical, that one gets ripped from her mom and sort of dumped here. I mean, I knew black people were selling slaves, so that wasn't new to me. But it's interesting that these people really existed at their time. I thought that was the most interesting thing. I mean, John Boyega really has nothing to do other than collect a paycheck.
Well, no, he was the only person playing an actual real person.
Oh, none of these little people are real?
Nope, just John Boyega. Everybody else is a fictional character for the film.
So this thing is a big load of crap, then. So I'm correct in stating that, then.
Yes. I wouldn't call this movie a piece of crap. I actually enjoyed it. It's not my favorite of the year. But, I mean, it's hard to dislike anything with Viola Davis in it. I mean, she gives 100%, even if she's just playing Amanda Waller in a Suicide Squad movie. She's fantastic. She's easy to like and root for, I think.
I have to agree with you on that point. But the problem for me, the supporting characters are not interesting. They don't do anything interesting to me.
No, I will admit I was not a fan of the whole I hit a shark's tooth in my daughter's shoulder, so that felt a little too convenient for me, but I didn't hate this movie. I think it did have some merit. I know the director, Prince Bythewood, I think is how you pronounce her name, Gina Prince Bythewood. I know she was very influenced by Braveheart, is not historically accurate at all either, so I think it was decent. I would not call it a piece of crap.
I'm not saying it's terrible. I mean, it's a 4. I gave it a 4. I couldn't pass it because I was bored.
Okay.
I have problems with films when I get bored. I'm like, you're not doing anything I haven't seen before. And Viola Davis is the best part of the film. I agree, but you're not on screen long enough. And I want to follow your character. I don't want to follow the supporting characters. They're uninteresting to me. So you got to be an interesting person to keep me going. So I know you're saying that the other movie, Braveheart, but Braveheart was good all the way through. It was fine. I don't care if it's not historical accurate. I enjoyed it. I mean, like I said, I just watched Medieval. I don't think that's historical accurate in any way. I got bored. I find historical pieces kind of boring at times because usually they take a small snippet of something and expand it. Now, my argument is if you're going to expand it, you better have a 15-minute fight scene. Like, give me something to stay with this, as opposed to watching the 3-minute trailer for this, which I did afterwards just to see, and they show all the fight scenes. My argument is your fight scenes are only 5 minutes. Like, I really would like to have seen more. And I'm really killing the Europeans. I couldn't care less. They were just stooges to me. Just cookie-cutter characters.
Like, I mean,
I don't care they died.
Could the lack of fight scenes have been because of COVID? Like, they couldn't get that many extras, and so they couldn't have the big battle scenes like you had in Braveheart or Gladiator?
I don't think so, because when I read this, they said, I listened to an interview with the two leads after I saw the film, and they were really down for it. They didn't say COVID was any issues at all. They said the hardest part was the dance sequence. They found that the most difficult thing to film, and I'm like, okay, but I don't see it. I mean, I'd like to see some more from this director. Like, I think there were some positives here. Positive, obviously, being Viola Davis. I think her fight scenes were decently shot, a little close for me. I'd like a little bit more expansive, but maybe that's what she wanted to focus on, the women warriors, how strong they were, and this and that. And, of course, they're all down for a sequel. And I'm like, there's no sequel here. Like, there was nothing really to build on. I mean, my issue is they're mad at the Europeans because they're trying to take over the slaves. But the thing is, I've never seen a film focus on the slave traders other than the Europeans being the slave trader. My argument is they've already told you black people sold slaves too. So why was he a film about that? Like, is it all about money? Like, that's what it sounds like here. Even the king's going on about money, saying we can't do this. Well, Viola Davis doesn't want to take it over. So I'm like, I don't know what to say here. I just don't think there's enough in this film to really sway us either way, if it's good or bad. I just think it's just another too small a chunk and just uninteresting at times.
Okay. I mean, the director's film with Charlize Theron, the group of immortal people.
I like blanking that. Again, I know they're making a two to that.
Yes. Different director, though, this time.
See, that bugs me. I wish we always had the same director. Didn't John McTiernan direct Die Hard 1 and 2?
No. He directed 1 and 3. 2 was Rennie Harlan.
Oh, great. That's why it looks kind of weird. Good old, God, we need somebody to get Rennie Harlan. I do have a quick Rennie Harlan story if you want to hear it.
Go for it.
I think it was Long Kiss Goodbye. Is that the one when Gina Davis plays a knife lady that remembers everything? Samuel Jackson's in it. So I'm on that set, and it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and we're told not to bug Gina Davis. We're told no way. But then weird was, I knew the security team at the time, so they told me where the set was. So I'm sitting there, we're waiting. And they always go, who do you want to meet? We'll set you up. We just can't do Gina Davis. I said, no problem. We won't bug her. He goes, I need Samuel Jackson and I need Rennie Harlan. He goes, no problem. So 2:30 in the morning, who walks by on lunch? Samuel Jackson. And I go, Samuel, get some autographs. He looks, he goes, why are you white folks out so late? And that's what he said to us. And then Rennie Harlan showed up about 5 minutes later. Couldn't have been nicer. Super, super nice guy. So I thumbs up to Rennie Harlan.
Awesome.
I wish I could give you the death of Angela Lansbury, but I never met her, so I have no Angela Lansbury stories for you.
That's fair.
So I'll try to give you guys a story if I meet somebody.
Have you ever met John Hamm?
I have met John Hamm.
You have?
Yeah, I have. And John Hamm, I can't remember what movie he was here for. But he's not the friendly. He's more like his Mad Men character than anything else. He's pretty much him. He comes off like that. He acts like him. I don't think it was real acting on Mad Men. I think he's kind of like him. I know he's a wannabe comedian. And we're going to discuss Confess Fletch, I presume you're going for here. So
yes, I was trying to segue. Confess Fletch was written and directed by Greg Mottola, starring the aforementioned John Hamm. Marcia Gay Harden, Kyle MacLachlan, John Slattery for a Mad Men reunion, and Roy Wood Jr. I gotta say, I enjoyed this movie. I thought it was fun. I kind of like when John Hamm isn't taking himself super seriously. I liked at the end of the movie where they set it up for him to give the whole big, you know, detective spiel, and this is what happened, and this is why you did this. And then Roy Wood Jr.'s like, no, that's not what happened at all, you idiot. And I like that. I like that they pulled the rug out from under him at the end, so he wasn't the brilliant detective that you thought he would be.
Well, I'm a huge fan of these books. I've read every single one of the books.
Okay.
So It really bugs me because Chevy Chase was perfect to me. He looked exactly what I wanted for the character. John Hamm is still a little too stiff as a comedian for me to play Fletch. I think everybody else does a great job but him. Not saying he was bad, he's just not comic enough. Fletch is more you. You're more Fletch to me than John Hamm is, because he's just not... Fletch is not supposed to be super good looking. That's the big thing about Fletch. He's just supposed to be kind of average, but super smart. And sarcastic as hell. Which is more me. So maybe I'm Fletch, but I don't know. I like this. I think they're really getting to the basic of Fletch. I just felt it stale. I thought all the background characters are great. The problem is John Hamm. He just didn't work for me as Fletch. But I think the problem was they have no money. I think the biggest problem in this film, that you can tell, they have no money. And I read somewhere that John Hamm gave up half his salary so they could complete the film.
Really?
Yeah, so that tells me that's probably the basic issue, is a money issue here, that they didn't have the money to spend to make the film the way it should have been, if that makes sense. I really felt that was a problem with this film, that it felt very tight and very small, which I think it should have been a bit bigger world. And I think that was just a budget constraint, and that's my biggest problem with this. It's okay. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. I was kind of like, this is just okay. Yeah, I got the Fletch. I know where you guys are going because I've read the books a long time ago. But I don't know. John Hamm's got to loosen up a bit more for me. Who really supports her name? Oh, my God. Marcia Gay Harden, is that her name? Was wonderful. Absolutely just a stellar performance from Marcia Gay Harden again.
Yeah, she was in it.
And who's plays the girl? The Italian girl's pretty cute. She's not hard in my eyes, but she wasn't anything great. And Roy Wood Jr. is just fun to watch. He kind of knows his position in movies. Mm-hmm. He's not going to be the star. He's just got to play the same guy, and he does a great job of it. Like, I like him.
Well, I read that his character, I've never read these books, but his character is actually a different character in the book, because that character was named Flynn or something and is actually the lead of other.
Oh, this is brutal.
So they had to invent a new one for Roy Wood.
But that's okay. I don't mind that. You can invent new characters in the Fletch world, because Fletch is always meeting new people constantly. So what can you do? So yeah, confess Fletch. I don't know if they're going to make another one. I wish they would, but I want more money behind it. I want to see a little bit more of the world. I don't know. It's just me. But Fletch being Fletch, I mean, what can I say? As long as it's Fletch, I'll watch it.
Okay. So do you want to go to the World's Fair?
No, not again. Please do not send me back to the World's Fair. Okay, I'm going to apologize to anybody who's going to listen to my review. I listened to a podcast, discussed this movie for an hour, telling me how good it was, great art direction, all this. I'm like, okay, I've never heard of this film. I'm always up for something different. I like to introduce new films to us, new directors. This was friggin' painful. Who's in it, by the way, before I continue my rant?
Basically, Anna Cobb as Casey, and the only other real character is JLB, who was played by Michael J. Rogers.
Okay, this film is friggin' boring. Nothing of interest happens. I don't even care. I'm sitting there going, do something. Do something. Other than stare at a screen and listen to some emo kid's problems for an hour and a half. I'm like, I do not want, I'm like, let's go to the World's Fair. I'm like, I thought this was going to be similar to that other one we did where the guy made the computer program and people had to choose or die. I thought, oh, maybe it's going to be something along that vein. Okay, this computer, I might kind of got it. Maybe two people had a similar idea. No, this is just a flaming pile of boredom listening to some kid talking about a problem. I don't care what the problem is. I have no interest in this. Nothing happens. I literally could barely stay awake watching this going, Doug is going to kill me.
Oh, and I hate ASMR. So that whole scene where go to sleep, it's okay. Shh. I hated that. I really wanted to punch the screen. It was not a good watch at all.
I apologize for this. I read good reviews about it, but I mean, we got to take chances, I guess.
That is true.
Occasionally on our films. So you had the same experience I did. This thing is just garbage.
Yeah, no, I'm happy that it was streaming on HBO Max, so I didn't have to pay any extra to rent this, or I did not enjoy myself with this movie at all.
Did anybody watch this with you? Because, I mean, I put it on, like, let's say 11 o'clock on a Friday night. I could barely stay awake.
No, I actually had it on as background noise while I was working, and I got caught up on so much work that nothing happened in this movie.
Yeah, literally, you could just do it. I'm sitting there watching it. I remember going, I think I worked. Maybe no, I didn't work that night. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to watch this movie. And I'm like, do something. Okay, like, I'm sitting there going, I think I could write a better script with dialogue right now than watching this junk.
The only thing that made me slightly uncomfortable was the very beginning when she pokes her finger with the pin, and that's about it. Everything else was just kind of just dull.
Well, I'm sorry for any viewers that actually like this film. Feel free to email me at extrafeatures@gmail.com and tell me why I'm wrong. But I don't think I am. I really think this is just a painful experience.
Yes. But do you feel like you could have run away from this movie?
Oh. You know what's funny? When I'm picking movies, I have a list, like I said, of films I have been meaning to watch. So when it's my pick, I try to mix in some sodium, older stuff. So I'm watching this, and I, you know what? I read nothing about films ahead of time. I just knew it was a Kurosawa film. It's supposed to be the most gorgeous movie of all times, this and that. I'm like, okay, I'll watch this. I'm sitting there going, and about 10 minutes in, I'm like, this is King Lear. I know this is King Lear. I don't even know where we're going in the story at. This is King Lear. And then I had to pause it and pull up my IMDb and like, King Lear. I'm like, I knew it was King Lear. You didn't have to fool me. So I'm like, okay, I know the story of King Lear. Let's see what he does with it. And it was, I just got bored because I mean, I knew the storyline already. And maybe it's just me, but I mean, it was nice to look at. I did enjoy it. I liked the cinematography, obviously. Costuming was just outstanding. But I didn't find it interesting because I already knew the story. And that's part of me. But he does do turns. I find the last hour was much more interesting than the beginning. When things go a little cuckoo bananas, and he's trying to work in some mystic arts and stuff, and the crazy wife, I'm like, okay, I don't think I remember this in King Lear. Maybe it was there. It's a long time since I've read it. But, okay, I'll give you credit, Kurosawa, your thing. I know we still have to do Throne of Blood, because that's Macbeth, I think. That's the other one.
That is Macbeth is my favorite Shakespeare play. And Throne of Blood is my favorite version of Macbeth.
Well, I haven't seen it.
I love that movie.
King Lear or Hamlet are my two favorite Shakespeares. So.
Okay.
Macbeth could be a third. I mean, number 1A, B right behind them. So We will do it at some point. I'm ready to visit Kurosawa again. I will.
I will say this was my first time seeing a Kurosawa film in color. I've seen a bunch of his black and white stuff. But this is my first time with color. I think I like his black and white better.
I do.
I gotta say, like, in the beginning, when you're first introduced to all the characters and the fool comes out, and he had that bright colored gi. I guess it's called the gi. I will admit my ignorance, and I'm not sure. That just seemed really garish to me. I was actually curious as to if those colors on clothes existed back then in feudal Japan. I haven't actually looked it up yet. I haven't had time, but it felt really outlandish to me. I prefer the Kurosawa films that are more grounded, High and Low. I think High and Low is an amazing film. I love Yojimbo, Seven Samurai, all the classics. But in color, I don't know. It just visually, it didn't work as well for me as the black and white. But I could be completely ignorant because, you know, Kurosawa's a classic filmmaker. This is one of his most classic films. I know Coppola and George Lucas, they both campaigned very hard for him to get his directorial Oscar nomination for this movie. I don't know. It just wasn't my favorite Kurosawa film.
Me too. And people love this film. Like, friends of mine say, you've never seen it? I can't believe you haven't seen it. So I finally said, okay, I got to watch this film just to clean off my very not long list of films I haven't seen that I feel I should have. This is just another one of those on my list. And I've seen it, but I wouldn't watch it again. And I don't think it is the most beautiful film I've ever seen.
No, I will agree. I thought some of the makeup looked incredibly theatrical, not very filmic. And I suppose that was a choice on Kurosawa's part, but it just wasn't a choice that was an aesthetic that I liked.
Have you seen any Ozu?
Ozu?
Tokyo Story?
No, I have not. I want to.
Okay, well,
I've heard Tokyo Story is fantastic.
I've seen Tokyo Story, and I've seen another one of his. He beats Kurosawa to me on painting a picture with no words.
Okay.
I think he is the master. I think he beats Tarkovsky. I think he beats Kurosawa. The only one I'd race him against is Luc Besson. Luc Besson did Breathless, or the wrong guy?
Godard.
The dog's the only one I will put up against Ozu. Those are my two favorite painting a picture directors ever.
Okay.
I mean, Breathless to me, it's just a beautiful, just the shots. And Ozu gets those shots too, but differently. And I can't explain because Ozu, his films are so grounded, it isn't funny. Basically, the only way, like Kurosawa, have Doug went to the store and 40 ninjas and be a big fight and this and that. Nothing will happen to Ozu other than you're going to the store. And they'll talk, and you'll meet people, and you'll have a nice shot, and you'll stop at a store, you'll buy some muffins, and you'll walk home. Nothing else will happen. And you'll sit there the whole time, your mouth will be dropping, because the most gorgeous thing you've ever seen in your life. And that's the only way I can describe an Ozu film. But yeah, we'll get there, I promise, because I've got to finish. I've only seen a couple of his, and they blow me away, both of them. So
okay.
And I look forward to it. I just randomly pick films to watch.
But the only thing keeping me, is it Tokyo Story? Isn't that like a 3-hour long movie?
Totally worth watching.
Okay.
Depressing as hell. But I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
So yeah, I think it's about time to discuss Bubba Ho-Tep. Written by Don Corsichelli, based on a Joe R. Lansdale story, and directed by Don Corsichelli, starring Bruce Campbell and Ozzie Davis. It's been a few years since I've seen this movie, I will be honest.
You want me to start? Okay. I don't know how to take this movie. Parts of this movie I really liked. I guess the whole problem was, and maybe you could help me with this issue, or maybe I should have figured it out. I had problems in the beginning deciding whether he was Elvis or not. And it was my biggest debate with myself till the end of the film. And I decided he was not Elvis. That he just convinced himself he was Elvis. And he goes on about Priscilla. And he goes on about, would they visit me? And I don't know. And I just think, I'm not sure what he was doing half the time. Whether he's doing an Elvis impression or doing a Bruce Campbell impression. I'm not really sure he knew what his character was. At times, I thought Ozzie Davis was phenomenal. Loved all the Ozzie Davis scenes. And then we get to the end of the movie. I'm kind of like, I spent an hour going, I don't know what's going on here. And I'm a little dull. I really felt the film didn't move fast enough for me. Okay. I really wished it did more outside of there, but it didn't. Then they finally get outside, and I kind of like, oh, good. I kind of like this. And then it's just this weird alien turn. I'm like, okay. I don't know. I'm still undecided whether I like this or didn't like this. I know I didn't love it. And I've read all these people are telling me I have to see this film, and I'm like, why? I don't know why this film is so revered. Like, I don't get it.
I could tell you why. I loved it.
Okay.
I came to it as a big Joe R. Lansdale fan.
So
I've read all of his novels. I've read a bunch of his short stories. So I was just excited to see Joe R. Lansdale adapted with one of my favorite B-movie actors, Bruce Campbell, in the lead. So I went into this movie on a big high. So yeah, I loved it. I think Bruce Campbell, I think he actually is Elvis.
Okay.
I don't think Ozzie Davis is really JFK.
Definitely not.
I think he was just feeding excuse me. I think he was just feeding off of Elvis's personality, and it's like, well, Elvis is obviously dead, so if you say you're Elvis, then I'm JFK. But I love this. I love the Aztec mummy. I thought the makeup looked really cool.
Yes.
For a low budget, just. Chuckle Lansdale dialogue. It has dialogue that makes me chuckle. I enjoyed it.
Oh, that's good. But so you think he is Elvis? What tells you he is Elvis? Help me out here, because I was having problems.
For me, it was I think it was the flashback when it showed the young Elvis. For some reason, that to me, in my mind, it solidified that he is in fact Elvis. I don't know why it just did, because I truly, if I'm gonna believe that there's alien mummy running around, I'm going to believe that Bruce Campbell is Elvis.
My issue with it was when they do the scene of him changing places with the guy, I'm like, okay, he's not Elvis. I think he just thinks he is. I don't think there is an answer here. I think either you're in or you're out, and you just got to make your own choice. And the film's a film either way. I don't know. I thought the metal might play more into it when he gets the purple heart.
Mm-hmm.
But doesn't really seem to do anything. I thought she might come back. No, not really. I just thought it might be a team-up movie in a cellar or something. But no, it's just too strange for me, I think. I really think I had too many questions when I left the film.
Okay.
But I'm glad you liked it. I'm glad you get more. That's why we have the show, so we can discuss these things.
Yes. And as I'm getting ready for my Lost Weekend coming up, do you want to discuss Billy Wilder's Lost Weekend with Ray Milland?
Yeah, you know what's funny? Because I told you I had not seen this. Mm-hmm. I mean, I told you I think I have 6 Wilder films. I think I'm down to 5 now. 10 minutes in, I'm like, I've seen this film. I had no recollection. I watched it until it started. And the bottle in the window, I'm like, I remember this now. I know how this works. And I remember the whole movie at that point, which was kind of weird to me, remembering the whole film. And it's all right. I enjoyed it again the second time. I thought everything works in this film. I thought you see the Wilderisms in it. You definitely see his film directing here. I'm very strong here, the way he shoots. Ray Millard was excellent. I do have some minor – my favorite scene is when he's in that daze and he's coming out of the hospital. I think the film really gets better at the hospital. He finally gets out of the apartment. He's done his binge. He goes to the hospital. He comes out. He tries to get out, and the guy goes, he's been here for a month. He'll be back. Don't worry. And he goes off, and he can't find a bar open anywhere. And he's talking to the priest or the rabbi. The rabbi. It's going to be a rabbi because he's Jewish. And he's going on, why is this place closed? Why is everything closed? And the guy goes, it's the Sabbath. You can't drink on, you know what I mean? It was some Yom Kippur. They can't drink. And he goes back and goes in. And this is where I have a problem with the film code. This guy should be dead. He He should have just shot himself and this film should be over. I really think that's the only problem with the film is the ending. He should have died. Instead of going, oh, I'm going to be fine after this. I'm like, no, no, you're not. There's nothing to tell me in this film you should be fine.
I haven't read the novel that the movie's based on. But
I didn't know it was based on a novel.
Yeah, it would not shock me if the ending was different in the novel, that it did have a more realistic, dark ending than the film did.
But you see where I'm going with. I think everything's great. I thought all the supporting actors were fine. I love the bartender. The bartender was great.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was really good. And yeah, I thought the pacing's good.
Yeah, I will be honest. When I first went into this, I was not expecting to like it as much as I did. I know this is Billy Wilder's first big Oscar win for this movie. I kind of thought it would be a sentimental look at alcoholism in a way. I didn't expect it to hit as hard as it did. And I think a lot of that is with Ray Milland's acting. I've only seen him in a few other things. I thought he was amazing in this movie. I definitely can see why he won the Oscar here. It was not sentimental. I think we actually did see a man bottom out to alcoholism on screen. I know the cover of the Blu-ray that I have has this bat on it. And I was wondering, what the hell does a bat have to do with this? But then when you see it in the film with the hallucinations, it worked. I thought really Billy Wilder and Ray Milland did... fantastic work here.
So I want to go back to the point you made with the bat. That was just bizarre to me at the time. Like, what? I get where they're going for. Now, have you seen Days of Wine and Roses, the Jack Lemmon film?
I have not. I have not seen that.
Okay. That is the best film about alcoholism I've ever seen in my life. But it is the most depressing thing you've ever seen. Like, that is what I think the ending of that film should have been the ending of this film.
Okay.
Being a huge Jack Lemmon fan, I've seen almost pretty close to every Jack Lemmon film on the planet. And so, I mean, Billy Wilder, we're good. I hate to tell people there's a big one coming up, and Doug will know what it is next time I do a list, because I'm going to add the next one on there. But no, Billy Wilder continues to impress me as we work our way through his discography. Or filmography, whatever. Yeah, filmography. I don't know why I say discography. Watching too much stuff lately. But no, I think this film is great. I just think it's... I don't want to watch it the third time. I'm done.
Well, here's the thing about Billy Wilder. This movie, as great as it is, it's not even in my top five favorite Billy Wilder films.
Understandable.
You know, and I think Billy Wilder is kind of unsung. I mean, I know he does get a lot of praise, but I think
Frozen Doug.
People today. Oh, sorry.
Billy Wilder gets a lot of praise,
but I think he doesn't get enough. I think a lot of younger film fans today don't recognize what Billy Wilder has done. I mean, he is able to work in many different genres. He's done film noir. He's done comedy. He's done, I don't know. But I think him and Robert Altman are two of the best directors America has ever had who don't get the credit that they deserve.
Okay, here's my problem with why they don't get it, is that kids today in this generation does not watch black and white film. Does not exist for them. If it's in black and white, they have no interest in watching it.
That's fair.
At all. Now, Scorsese gets things because he's still making films today. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? He's still making films. That's the problem. These films are from our parents' generation. You know, it's not our generation. We're going back because we're film nerds and have to watch everything. Oh, sorry. Should I use the word film enthusiasts? No, we're film nerds because we actually give a crap and do research and get into it. So, yeah, I agree with you 100%. Allman, to me, is one of those directors you just have to immerse yourself in. Just jump in and watch his films. Like, he's not going to ever blow you away. I don't think he blows you away, but they're so good. Like, they just, they consume you in his universe. And that's what Altman is hard, because it doesn't have, like, a Goodfellas or something going, you got to see this Altman film. But because he's just, he's very talky. And a lot of people don't like that. But I think Altman's a genius.
Yeah, I think if you could sit and watch Nashville,
which I think
that, I think that is the ultimate Altman. It has the overlapping dialogue. It has strong characters, the music. Nashville, I think, is the ultimate test for Altman. If you could sit and just be absorbed into the world of Nashville, Altman is for you. That is the ultimate Altman film, in my opinion.
I agree with you 100%. I've seen a lot of Altman. I still have a lot to go, but I'll get there. We got to finish this guy first, and then maybe Altman or Ozu or the 25 Kurosawas I still have to watch or something. But we still have a lot of Godzilla, which I'm still enjoying.
Yes. So we're going to discuss Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla.
Yes.
There's no actors in this that anybody would recognize.
Oh, question. Before we go on, have you finished your box set? Have we even got to the end yet?
I honestly, I finished it a while ago. I don't remember what movies we have and haven't discussed yet. But yeah, I've watched them all.
Okay. So the whole plan of this was to make sure Doug finished his Godzilla box set.
Yes.
And we sing. So I'm the biggest Godzilla fan, you know. Like, I don't think there's anybody bigger. I just love these films. This film is a flaming piece of junk, but it's so much fun watching it. It isn't funny. Now, I have a question. We're watching the film. They give us a storyline. I'm in. We got to get Godzilla. I don't know what Godzilla does between film and film, but nobody seems to know where he is. He's always not where he's supposed to be. That's all I've understood from Godzilla. And they got to somehow get Godzilla back here. And it's always some native with some cannon to call some Godzilla. I don't know how they figure out that they can call him through these things, but fine, whatever. Then this guy makes a robot. Now, I never understood his plan. Because literally, whenever we get somewhere, this is the worst editing I've ever seen in a film. It's like we have a scene about Godzilla, or we have a film about Mechagodzilla, or we have a film with somebody else. None of it seems to mesh. Like, there seems to be no flow from scene to scene. It seems like I watched an hour and a half of shorts that somehow are supposed to be making sense. But I'm like, I don't understand. I understand Godzilla looks skinny now, like, which is weird. Because the early Godzilla, he actually looks like a monster. And I find they try to friendly him up as we've been going along. They kind of make him a little less menacing, a little more, look at me, like Godzuki. I want to hang out with him. At least he wasn't there. That was a positive. But yeah, like, this is just another silly Godzilla film. The fight scenes are funny. I'm watching this going, this makes no sense. Literally no sense at any time. Like, a plot would have been nice. An actual plot that goes from scene to scene to scene to explain everything to me, other than some guy created a robot to take over the world. I think that's what he's trying to do.
Yeah, and I will be honest, the other kaiju who comes to help Godzilla at the end, I just was not a fan of the design.
No, it looked terrible.
I'm not the big floppy ears. But it's a Godzilla film. And he's fighting a giant robot Godzilla. So it's fun.
So just so people know, this is our 14th Godzilla film in the show. We're going to number 30.
Holy
16 more Godzilla films. But we are going to do them all.
So we're going to do the ones from the 90s and the 2000s?
Well, then, no, I think we're going to stop just before that because I have to do Bionic Godzilla because I need my fairies.
Okay.
But this is one I had not seen. I will fully say I don't remember ever watching this before.
Okay.
So it was kind of new to me, and I'm kind of like, okay. Like, this is just a flaming pile of garbage. But if you're Godzilla fan, you kind of got to watch it.
Oh, yeah, it's perfect for us. I watched all of them originally Saturday afternoons. They were on TV. So yes. As a kid, you would sit with, I guess I had some cereal, just sit in front of the TV Saturday afternoon watching Godzilla movies. That's what this is for.
Oh, I agree. But I mean, I'm just such a huge fan. I'm going to watch up to number 30 and then.
Okay.
I think that'll probably be the end for me unless they make some new ones. But I'll watch those too, of course. Continue on, sir.
Well, next we have the residents of 1313 Mockingbird Lane, The Munsters, written and directed by Rob Zombie, starring Sherry Moon Zombie, Jeff Daniel Phillips, and Daniel Roebuck. I have to say, for me, I enjoyed the Munsters TV show. It was never my favorite TV show. This movie was painful to watch. I am just not a fan of Rob Zombie's filmmaking. I think of all the movies of his I've seen, I've liked one of them, and that was The Devil's Rejects. Because the aesthetics of that, I don't know. This movie wasn't for me. The humor didn't work for me. The makeup looked kind of cheesy, but I guess he was kind of going for that. I don't know. I just did not care for this.
I thought the dialogue was absolute trash. It made no sense. This storyline is just going off the deep end right off the beginning. Sherry Moon Zombie doesn't look right to me at any time. I think she's just a terrible actor. Because I know why she's in the film, because she's dating and married to the director. I get it. I don't think he knows how to direct a film properly. His editing is always bad. He takes horrible shot selections at times. And Grandpa Monster was unfunny. How is that possible? The Grandpa Monster is supposed to be funny. And he's not funny, so it just makes no sense to me. I thought the guy Roebuck was excellent as
Grandpa.
Oh, not Grandpa. The Frankenstein guy was great.
Oh, Jeff Daniel Phillips. Excellent, Herman.
Excellent as Herman. I just thought this film was trash. I absolutely hated most of it. I didn't mind the set design, but that's not Rob Zombie. That's the set designer who seemed to know what they were going for the aesthetic. But storyline to me, like, dumb. Like, I'm not saying Monsters was like a thing, but it had some jokes in it and flowed, and it was 22 minutes, not an hour 30 of straight pain for me. I tried hard to like this. I really did, but I got to agree with you. I don't like Rob Zombie's movies. I don't like Rob Zombie as a director. I'm kind of done with Rob Zombie.
That is fair. So are you ready to discuss the tragedy of Marilyn Monroe's life?
Oh, fuck. Do we have to?
Yes. If I had to watch it, we have to discuss it. We watched Blonde, written and directed by Andrew Dominik. Starring Ana de Armas, Brody as Arthur Miller, and I'm blanking on his name now, but as Joe DiMaggio, Bobby Cannavale.
That's correct. Okay, this was supposed to be the big Netflix release. I put it on the list because Ana de Armas was in it. Oh my God, was this 2 hours, 2.5 hours? I think this painful thing was
2:45.
Oh, my God. And I mean, I'm a Marilyn fan. I think I've seen, I'll have to double check, but probably almost every Marilyn Monroe film. Cameo, little scene, everything I've seen. I don't know what this was. This is like somebody taking gossip ideas and putting it into a film. And then I read the book is like fictionalized and the movie is fictionalized. I'm like, I get it, but this is just painful. I mean, it's beautiful to look at. If I turned it off, I would love this film. Like, it's just beautiful. But I'm like, this film is just, seem again, like a bunch of short films. Mm-hmm. Let's have a big 15-minute short film of her getting treated crappy by her mom. Joe DiMaggio beating the crap out of her? I never read that anywhere. I'm not saying that's not real. I'm saying I've never read that and never really felt Joe DiMaggio would do that. Maybe he did. The threesome scene was just bizarre to me. I'm not saying Marilyn didn't have threesomes. I don't really care. But, I mean, great. We see Adam Driver's boobs. I don't care. I'm like, I don't know what is going on here. And then we get to the Arthur Miller scene and we switch to color. And I'm like, I don't care. I'm just like, and then we get to the end of the movie. I'm like, oh my God, we're finally done. Please tell me we're finally done. And it just drags constantly. I'm like, what is this film trying to tell me? I did think of that. I'm like, I don't see a point to this. You're not really giving me a narrative I can follow other than this is the highlights of Marilyn's tragedies. I got that. Mm-hmm. I mean, the JFK scene was just terrible.
Yes.
I'm like, why am I watching this? Like, is this softcore porn? Like, I don't know what the director wants me to get out of this. Like, yeah. I know Marilyn. I've read books on Marilyn. This, I don't know what this is.
Yeah, I had told Owen that I had to watch this, and he said, you know, a lot of people were discussing it in school, so he wanted to know what my take was on the movie, and this is what I texted him. It's beautifully shot. Ana de Armas is great, but it is very slow, overly long, and just utterly depressing.
Correct.
Like, there was no good stories about Marilyn in this movie.
Not one.
And her life couldn't have been that. I know she did have a tragic life, but I mean, my wife Tina, she told me a story that would have been great for this movie, but it wasn't in there. There was a club that Marilyn Monroe went to, and she told the owner of the club, if you hire Ella Fitzgerald to come sing here, I will be at this club every night in the front row, because Marilyn wanted to hear Ella Fitzgerald sing, and Ella Fitzgerald, being a black woman, couldn't get booked in the big clubs. Well, the club owner hired Ella Fitzgerald, and Marilyn Monroe stuck to her word, came every night, and it was a profitable experience for all involved. And I would have liked to have had that one, at least one good story about. In this movie.
I'm with you 100% that this film needed something positive as opposed to negative, 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 negative constantly. I'm totally with you. I don't know who this film is for. I don't know why it needs to be so friggin' long. Like, enough of beating me in the head. I thought I was watching Blue Valentine again, which I absolutely never wanted to watch again. That was just too depressing for me, too. I don't need to be depressed.
Honda and Barbarian, the first movie we discussed.
Oh, Barbarian's amazing. That's depressing as hell, but fun.
But I have an interesting connection between those two movies, aside from they both start with B.
Okay, let's hear it.
Sarah Paxton, she played Miss Flynn in Blonde. She was the neighbor who took in young Norma Jean after the fire. Yes. She is actually married to Zach Krieger, writer-director of Barbarian, and she also provided the voice on the nursing video in Barbarian.
Oh, well, there you go. Now we know there's a connection.
Yes.
Well, she's in one good film and one crap film.
Yes.
Do we have one more? We have one more. Are we done?
I think that's it.
Awesome. We made it through this terrible internet connection. So did you buy anything, Doug, before we go?
I did not. I have a son in college now, so I've been buying a lot less.
Oh, wow. Look at that. Doug's showing restraint.
Yes.
Well, hopefully next time, people, we'll have better internet connection. And before we go, I only have one thing left to say. If they make it,
Marilyn Monroe gets really depressed.